Hello, and welcome to Church in Maine. Church in Maine is a podcast that is at the intersection of faith and modern life. I'm Dennis Sanders, your host. We look for God in the midst of the issues that are affecting the church and the larger society. You can learn more about the podcast, listen to past episodes, and donate by checking us out at churchinmaine.org or churchinmaine.substack.com. Consider subscribing to the podcast on your favorite podcast app and leave a review. That helps others find the podcast. You know, it's been a while since I've done a solo episode, and I don't like doing them as much as I used to, partially because I think they can be a bit self-indulgent, and partially because some of my early episodes, I feel like I didn't know what I was doing. And so, you know, I'd rather not do them as much. But this was one I felt like I needed to get off my chest. Being that it is an election year, it is something that I wanted to talk about. And that is talking about engaging with Trump voters. So I'm not going to go into a whole lot about this, except that I feel like the way that we usually deal with Trump supporters isn't well, it doesn't work. I think I was actually looking at an article from the Dispatch, which is a center-right publication that I really enjoy. And they were kind of interviewing people who are Trump supporters. And it's interesting reading the comments, which, of course, you should never do, but I did. And people were just kind of making fun of people and calling them morons, calling them idiots. And I kept thinking, this doesn't work. This is not going to work. But I think that that's kind of how we deal with things. And what I'm going to do here, and it's something that I really wanted to, I felt like today I wanted to do this and I wanted to get it out as soon as possible. It's really what I'm kind of going to be riffing off of two articles I wrote, one in August of last year, and one I wrote, I believe, in late January and so of this year. So I wanted to kind of talk about these things and let the chips fall where they may. People may like it. People may give it some thought. People also may think I'm full of it. But I think it's something that I wanted to bring up and wanted to share. And so I hope you'll listen. So here we go. I'm going to go ahead and start reading it, and we'll go from there. Jesus calls us to love our enemies and pray for our persecutors, and that means loving the people who are probably not the right people. In reality, it means loving sometimes the people who are the opposite of everything that we believe in. And I think that God calls us to live out this challenge, but too often we fail because, frankly, it is damn hard to love someone that seems unlovable. And yet, this is what we're called to do. And I think as Christians who live in the United States, especially at this particular moment, it is something that we have to do for the sake of our nation and for the sake of our world. Back in August of 2023, New York Times columnist David Brooks came out with a provocative op-ed, and it had the title, "What If We Are the Bad Guys Here?" What follows is an essay of introspection regarding the continuing popularity of Donald Trump. He counters the oft-told and comforting tale told by those opposed to the former president about his rise to power. And you know the story. Donald Trump and his followers are a reactionary force of bigots afraid of social progress, the social progress that this nation has made in the last 50 to 60 years. They either want to slow the progress down or turn back the clock, harming people of color and LGBTQ Americans. Those of us who oppose him are the forces of enlightenment and progress, standing firm against these dangerous forces. It's a tempting story. It's a comforting story. There is even some truth in that story. It's a way to console ourselves in this very fraught time. Whatever happens, we can rest assured that we are ultimately on the right side. And what about those Trump supporters? Well, we tell ourselves that Hillary Clinton was right. They are deplorable. That is the story, and like a lot of things of life, as I said, there's a whole lot of truth in it. But what if it's not the whole story? What if those of us who oppose Trump aren't so pure? David Brooks tells the story of American culture from the 1960s onward, but he looks at it from the viewpoint of a Trump supporter, and it paints a very different picture from the story that many of us believe in. He writes, "The story begins in the 1960s, when high school grads had to go off to fight in Vietnam, but the children of the educated class got college deferments. It continues in the 1970s when the authorities imposed busing on working class areas in Boston, but not on the upscale communities like Wellesley, where they themselves lived. The ideal that we're all in this together was replaced with the reality of the educated class lives in a world up here, and everyone else is forced to live in a world down there. Members of our class are always publicly speaking out for the marginalized, but somehow we always end up building systems that serve ourselves." The cultural and economic forces of the past four decades or so have benefited many of those anti-Trumpers. While those who ended up supporting Trump have had to deal with job insecurity and fractured families. Brooks continues, or Brooks adds, "It's easy to understand why people in less educated classes would conclude that they are under economic, political, and cultural and moral assault, and why they've rallied around Trump as the best warrior against the educated class." He continues, "Trump understood that there was a great demand for a leader who would stick his thumb in our eyes on a daily basis and reject the whole epistemic regime that we rode in on." Now, of course, Brooks is no Trump supporter, but his article was apocalyptic in that it revealed what might be the sin of those of us who are worried about the rise of Donald Trump again. As someone who, myself, has come from an economically depressed area of Flint, Michigan, and has seen how the working class and working class families have been ripped apart by changes in our society, I think he's correct. Just because we're on the right side doesn't mean that we're pure. But the thing is that showing any concern for this group of people is going to get pushback, and Brooks got it. Responding to his article, Zach Beauchamp of Vox shared surveys and studies that try to debunk Brooks, and he speaks for many when he says that Trump voters really can't be reconciled with other Americans. And this is what Beauchamp says, quote, "The reality is our deep political divide is rooted first and foremost in profound and largely irreconcilable views of who America is for and what its social or hierarchy should look like," unquote. The reaction to Brooks' article is reminiscent of how another New York Times columnist, Bret Stephens, was received when he wrote that he was wrong about Trump voters. He shared some of the same things that he noticed in an article last summer. People who felt neighborhoods were unsafe or schools were not as good and felt America was in cultural and economic decline. He says, quote, "It's one thing for social mores to evolve over time, aided by respect for differences of opinions. It's another for them to be abruptly imposed by one side on another with little democratic input, but a great deal of moral bullying," unquote. The reaction was very similar to Brooks in that it was blistering. There was no interest in trying to understand these voters. So who are these voters? Well, let's go back to 2016 during Donald Trump's first presidential run. What was fascinating about that run was how a few things were coming together that brought to fore some of the problems facing America. In the fall of 2015, Angus Deaton won the Nobel Prize for Economics for his work with his wife, Anne Case, in looking at the white working class in America and how they were dying at a young age from what was being called the deaths of despair. Also in 2016, Chris Arnotti, a former bond trader on Wall Street, started walking across America, meeting people he later called Back Row America. These were people that were forgotten by both political parties. In that same year, J.D. Vance, before he went over to the dark side, released his book, Hillbillyology. And that book was released to wide acclaim and shed light on the lives of broken families in the Rust Belt and other areas. These and other events served to provide some context as to why Donald Trump was becoming so popular, even though his character was so terrible. What we learned was that large swaths of America weren't doing well. In some aspect, they might be doing well financially, but they weren't doing well emotionally or spiritually. Now, since 2016, there has been this discussion as to what pushed people to vote for Trump. And the argument has swung back and forth between either changing demographics or a love of authoritarianism on one side or economic and cultural concerns. Now, I think that the answer lies between those two choices, though I tend to believe that the struggles of the working class are a strong factor. Not the only factor, but a strong one. But that said, it seems like among many of my fellow Never Trump Republicans and Democrats, the belief is that Trump supporters are, as David Brooks describes them earlier, bad people who can't handle all the changes, social changes taking place in America. So my response to that is, so what? Does that mean that we just ignore them? Do we continue to call them names and talk about how they're stupid? And do we think that if we do all this, Trump supporters will magically change their minds? Now, my point here is not to excuse the excesses of Trump supporters. It's hard to get past why people would support someone that behaves so horribly and, frankly, tried to steal an election. It's about trying to understand them, and that means seeing them as human beings and not as the other. And it means that we have to love our enemies. What if we actually listened to these people? What if we found ways to connect instead of simply condemning them? We hear a lot about how dangerous a second Trump turn will be to America and how it will harm, if not end, American democracy. And I agree with all this. Now, I don't think that Trump is going to be a new Hitler. I don't necessarily think that American democracy will end if he becomes president. But that also means that Trump doesn't have to be a Hitler, and American democracy doesn't have to end for things in a second Trump term to be really, really bad. I think that this is a man that is nursing a major grudge. And he seeks to unleash his fury at those who wronged him should he become president again. When I was writing one of the articles about listening to Trump supporters, Politico had an interesting profile of a man named Ted Johnson in New Hampshire. He was initially going to support Nikki Haley, but then he switched to Donald Trump. Why? Because he thought that Donald Trump was, and I quote, a wrecking ball. Johnson wanted someone who was going to destroy the regular order. He knew that Trump was a jerk and a person of terrible character, but frankly, none of that mattered. He needed someone that could burn it all down. Now, it's easy for us to just write him off and write off all of the other Trump supporters as crazy and possibly bigoted. But what if there's something more going on here? But the true fact of the matter is, most of us who oppose Trump don't care. We didn't care much in 2016, and we really don't care now. I've been around Never Trump conservative and progressive circles long enough to know that what we call Trump supporters anything from being cult members to racists. Whatever we call them, the message remains the same. We don't want to know them, and we don't think much of them. Now, I mentioned Hillary Clinton earlier, and she, back in 2016, got tons of grief for her deplorables comment, and I think rightly so. But there is another part of that statement that people forget, This is what she said after the deplorable's comment. And she said, quote, "But the other basket, and I know I see friends from all over America here. I see friends from Florida and Georgia and South Carolina and Texas, as well as New York and California. But that other basket of people are people who feel the government has let them down. Nobody cares for them. Nobody worries about what happens to their lives and their futures. And they are just desperate for change. It doesn't really even matter where it comes from. They don't buy everything he says, but he seems to hold out some hope that their lives will be different. They won't wake up and see their jobs disappear, lose a kid to heroin, and feel like they're in a dead end. Those are the people we have to understand and empathize with as well." Unquote. I wonder what would have happened had Clinton led with this or minimized the deplorable comment. Clinton knew that some of the people voting for Trump weren't terrible people, but they were just dealing with the anxieties of life. Why do people want to vote for someone that they know is so toxic? Many of us, myself included, shake our heads in disgust, think that people are just afraid of a changing America and just don't like black and brown people or gays or anyone that just isn't white. And some of that is true. But why aren't we curious to learn more? Why aren't we interested in wanting to persuade them to seek a better way, not by shaming them, but by loving them? One of the hardest things we as followers of Jesus are called to do is to love our enemies, as Jesus says on the Sermon on the Mount. And I notice that especially in mainline churches, we talk about this verse and look condescendingly at our conservative sisters and brothers who can't seem to love people that are different from them. But the reality of that statement is that we are called to love those who might not love us back. Loving our enemies means that sometimes we are called to love assholes. And many Trump voters are assholes. Does that mean that we accept whatever garbage they say? Do we allow them to mistreat us and our friends? No. But it does mean being willing to listen. It does mean asking them questions. It does mean treating them as a child of God. As Christians, we are called to love the enemy. But we are far too often wanting to turn it into loving those that we deem acceptable. We want to make it about diversity. But that passage says that we are called to love the unlovable. Daryl Davis learned to love the unlovable. Maybe you've heard this story before. Years ago, he went to a parade as a 10-year-old. It was 1968. He was a young African-American boy. He was one of two black kids in a troop. And a parade was lined with an all-white crowd. And people started to yell at him. As his parents were trying to explain what was going on later in the day, he wondered, how could people hate me when they don't know me? That was a question that remained in his head for several decades. Over time, Daryl became a musician. And one evening, there was a white man that was impressed with him and his playing of the keyboards. After his gig, they sat down for drinks, and the man was amazed that he was actually talking to Daryl. Daryl wondered why. Well, the man replied that he was a Klansman. And for the two of them to talk and have a drink was odd. Well, that got Daryl thinking. He started basically a passion to strike up relationships with known Klansmen. He actually even went to Klan rallies with his new friends and invited Klansmen to his concerts and to his home to meet his diverse friends. In one case, he had a friendship with the Imperial Dragon, the head Klansman of the United States named Roger Kelly. And in a CNN interview, Roger said he was glad for the relationship, but he believed his views were cemented. He wasn't going to change. Except they weren't. Over time, their relationship changed Kelly so much that he left the Klan and gave his Klan outfit to Daryl. Daryl has created friendships with Klansmen over and over again. These were people who were racist, and they changed. And they changed not by being shamed, but by simply having a relationship with an African-American man. Davis was able to talk to someone who was truly the enemy to great effect. The thing is that if he could do this with a member of the Klan, and not just one member, but many members, maybe we could talk to Trump supporters. None of this means that we're going to agree with them, but it does mean seeing them not as monsters, but as the flawed human beings that they are, the flawed human beings that God loves. As we head into this election year, as many of us are concerned about a second Trump term, maybe the best way to make that not happen is by persuading Trump supporters. And by doing that, by listening to them and talking to them and not necessarily treating them as the other. Calling people bigots isn't very effective. As much as it is satisfying, it's not effective. It only deepens the partisan divides in our country, and frankly, it only ends up empowering Trump and his ilk. But reaching out in love and listening to others, well, that might change the world. So, that is my essay. Do with it as you will. I'd love to hear from you, know what you have to say. Maybe you don't agree. There are a lot of people who I've written this don't agree. But I'd love for you to talk and maybe talk with others. And if you are a Christian, to even pray, what is God calling you to do? Thank you for listening to this solo episode. If you are, I do have actually other episodes coming up, new, several, interviews. Do stay tuned. I do want to, say that, if you are interested in what is being put out, if you're one of the, five people that listen to this, consider actually making a donation. You can do that by, if you read these or get this via Substack, you can subscribe and become a paying member. It's $5 a month or $60 a year. There's also a link for you to make a one-time donation through DonorBox. Either way, that helps. It helps pay for some of the cost of getting for some of the tools that I use to get the podcast out to you all. And so I would hope that you would consider doing that. Remember again to rate and review this episode on your favorite podcast app so that others can find it. And I hope that you would pass this episode along to family and friends that might be interested. That is it for this episode of Church in Maine. I'm Dennis Sanders, your host. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you for being willing to listen to my rambling. Take care, everyone. Godspeed, and I will see you very soon.